Also Chuck Pritchard. Okay. Okay, and then Kay Mercer and Lawson Schaller. All right, Mr. Schmidt.
Is that for public forum?
No, no, it's on agenda item 22.
Chairman Young, members of the board, staff, my name is Kirk Schmidt. I'm the executive director of Central Coast Water Quality Preservation, or Preservation Inc., as you heard it referred to earlier today. As you know, for the past 3 years, we've been monitoring impaired waterways, that is, waterways that have been designated as impaired before we started monitoring water quality in agricultural areas, starting in January 2005. Two of the areas were referred to in some of the slides earlier today in the Salinas area and Santa Maria. We have 3 years of monitoring of water quality in those areas, sampling monthly for constituents and sampling for toxicity 5 times a year, 4 times water quality toxicity. That's 2 wet season samples and 2 dry season samples. As a result, we probably have the most complete set of water quality monitoring on the Central Coast. To some extent, the completeness of our database is one of the reasons that there are more red dots up on the maps than there are in urban areas, because what we have is a statistical abnormality where you can cite, you can test in one site once and have toxicity, and it's an orange dot, I guess. But if you sample 12 times and have 3 hits, it's a red dot. If you sample 1 out of 1, that's 100% toxicity. 3 out of 12 is only 25%. As we sample more and more often, there are going to be more and more numeric instances in agricultural areas just because of the breadth of the program. However, Sarah Green and my office and myself have worked with your staff at great length, and they've been very responsive not only at implementing the monitoring program, but looking at ways we can improve the monitoring program and make it more easily understood when it's presented to you and to the general public and the agricultural community. The ag waiver, as you're aware, was originally implemented with most of the focus on items that the farmers had to do to improve water quality. It was designed to have them learn about the water in their area, which we now have 3 years worth of data, and we're rolling out educational programs throughout the region to explain to agricultural about water quality in their area. The second thing is practices that they could implement. And the third is implementation of practices. And Allison referred to some of these, and particularly the knowledge that farmers have about irrigation and management practices. An extensive amount of research has been done over the many years by the UC Ag Extension and others on water quality management, pesticide management. However, this research was not integrated with looking at what happens to the water once it flows off of the farm. So while there's been extensive irrigation management, there was not a concern about where the water was going, and we need more help to give farmers that information. And I think the idea for the irrigation and management program that Allison referred to would be very helpful. But lastly, and most importantly, there was a reference in staff reports to the problematic nature of most of the major vegetable crops on the Central Coast. It referred to as problematic lettuce, broccoli, cauliflower, and indeed, apparently, Brussels sprouts as a coal crop. Well, this represents $1.9 billion in annual farm gate harvests and would be a majority of the agriculture on the Central Coast. The definition of problematic is probably problematic in this instance. It may be that another word should have been used, because it would be unfortunate if the ag community felt that these crops were singled out, as opposed to looking at improvement of water coming off of farms without regard for the crops that were on the farm. Because if there was a belief in the ag community that the three biggest ag, or some of the biggest agricultural crops, including lettuce, have been targeted, the cooperation of the ag community would change radically, because there would be no way for someone to conduct the business of growing lettuce if they were in fear of losing their product. It's much easier to encourage people to do a better job if they have the hope of success by keeping their crop and doing something about improving water quality coming off of their farm. And indeed, again, this is why the grant that Allison referred to would be helpful, because it may be able to take the additional step of integrating the existing research on pesticide management, irrigation management, with water quality coming off of the farm. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Don Funk, and then I guess Chuck Pritchard is also on your speaker card. Is that right?
He is.
Okay.
Good afternoon. I'm Don Funk, or DJ Funk, and I'm the Upper Salinas Las Tablas Resource Conservation District Executive Director. And our district has existed since 1951, working with agriculture, both with ranchers and farmers in this area. And we have a proposal today to deal primarily with a plan that I think in this area has been neglected, at least to date. And I'm going to submit the proposal to you. And it's an unusual proposal. It's we've described it as a partnership to work with the Region Water Quality Control Board. We met with staff, I guess, a little over a year ago to talk about various ways that the RCD could assist in the improvement of water quality from ranch lands. And in 1995, the State Water Resources Control Board approved the California Rangeland Water Quality Management Plan for the state of California. And that plan established a program that was intended, I believe, to work with three entities, the UC Cooperative Extension, NRCS, which is our sister or partnership agency, and the Resource Conservation District, and the Regional Water Quality Control Board. And so what I've submitted to you today is a proposal from our board of directors to conduct a program that would, it's a five-year proposed program, that would work with ranchers in our area to begin implementation of that 1995 plan. And so I hope you have an opportunity to read the plan. I've got one copy of it with me here today. It established in the document itself, RCDs is one of the primary ways to implement the plan. The problem has been since 1995, at least when this plan was adopted, very little money has ever been expended to help the RCDs to accomplish this work, at least in this area. And so our proposal is to look at ways that we could work with the regional board in accomplishing the strategies that are identified in the rangeland plan for the state of California. And there's a number of them. And I think our plan does a good job of doing that. We're working with some other organizations in terms of creating a positive point system, very much like the Central Coast Vineyard team has, but for ranchers. And that's moving along very nicely, and it's based by ranchers. It's the organization that, or the people that are coming up with that plan right now are ranchers, and we're just helping with it, and they're also getting help from the Extension Office as well in the preparation of that. And we also work with other organizations. We feel that this is a good way to implement the plan and to try to get something going to help ranchers in our area.
Thank you for that, and I'm sure that staff will be responding to your proposal.
Okay.
Mr. Pritchard.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'm Chuck Pritchard. I'm the president of the Upper Salinas Las Tablas Resource Conservation District. I'm a cattle rancher out in the Carrizo Plains area, and I'd like to make a couple of comments. Don mentioned the California Rangeland Water Quality Management Plan. I think you folks should have copies of this already. If not, I can make sure that you get copies. One of the interesting parts of this is the last two pages of this printed document is a technical and policy advisory committee to put this thing together, which was about a 2.5-year process. It included folks from the Cattlemen's Association, Department of Conservation, Fish and Game, Forestry, Farm Bureau, Native Plant Society, Oak Foundation, County Supervisors, Watershed Management Council, Wool Growers, Cow Trout, Resource Conservation Districts, Marin Agricultural Land Trust, and another second page of those types of folks. So this plan was put together with a lot of hard work and a lot of input from a lot of folks. Money was appropriated at that time to actually do a series of classes around the state. And it was a combination of the California Cattlemen's Association, Range Management Advisory Committee, which I was a member of and still am, and Department of Conservation as well. In about 5 years, those classes were held around the state of California, and over 1 million acres was enrolled in this program, ranchers that went through this process. Unfortunately, and this is with a grain of salt, I heard something earlier today about a statewide grazing management plan. I'd like to see that. I really would, because it's probably got to be about that thick, and it's going to probably take the next 400 years to implement it. Grazing management, like any other management in agriculture, has got to be done on a site-specific basis, because you're not just talking about animals. You're talking about a complete environmental plethora of things, soils, topography, a whole range of issues. In San Luis Obispo County, we go from about 75 inches of rainfall in the range of mountains right next to the coast on the high all the way to 3 inches of rainfall out in the back end of the Carrizo Plains. So if somebody thinks they're going to come up with a statewide management grazing plan, let alone a countywide, gentlemen, I think you're wasting your time. So it's going to take time, it's going to take finance, it's going to take outreach and education, and it's not going to be a quick, simple solution. And the same thing with irrigated agriculture. You are dealing with a whole lot of entities. The Resource Conservation District, like Don said, in this state has been here since the 1950s. And that partnership, when it first started back in the 1930s, I may remind you, is the partnership that basically put the Great Plains and the Midwest back together again. So if you're seriously considering some type of a management plan to get this implemented on the ground, I would suggest that maybe you give that partnership a chance to succeed. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Daniel Diz, followed by Kay Mercer, and then Richard Sadowski.
Daniel Diaz.
Diaz, pardon me.
It's okay. I have some pictures I'd like to be shown on the screen. Can I have that done?
Okay.
Who's the picture guy? Start right. Start at the top. Work your way through. These are pictures of Napomo Creek.
Mr. Chairman, yes. Since that might take just a minute to get going, maybe we should go ahead to Kay.
Okay. You know, Mr. Diaz, the machine is going to take a couple of minutes to warm up.
Oh, okay.
So that we can give you your full time with the photographs.
Okay,
why don't we skip to Ms. Mercer, and then we'll come right back to you.
Hello, Board. I am Kay Mercer with the Southern San Luis and Santa Barbara County Ag Watershed Coalition, and I just wanted to make a couple of clarifying comments about the presentations. Felt that staff did a very balanced job in presenting the information. A clarifying comment was in regards to Sarah Green's comments that this was ag data. I do want to emphasize that, as Kurt Schmidt did illuminate, the sites are in the lower ends of watersheds that are impaired, the monitoring sites for the cooperative monitoring program. But it is important to note that many of those sites, particularly south of Cuesta Grade, are mixed-use sites. They're not 100% ag. So when we talk about ag data, that just means that agriculture is doing the monitoring. It doesn't necessarily mean they're agricultural sites. The second item is a comment that urban uses of chlorpyrifos and diazinon are banned. That is not accurate. The sale of chlorpyrifos and diazinon were banned on January 1, 2005. Many pest control operators stockpiled product. We don't know how much is still being used in urban situations. So, and there's no way to track it. DPR doesn't have that information. The manufacturer sold it, but they don't know what's still being applied. So that is not quite accurate. The third thing is it's real important to note, and I think this came up to date, that the use of OP pesticides and pyrethroids will vary greatly depending on what crop you're talking about. And so the reason why that's really important takes me to my next item. It's also important to note that in cool season vegetables, there are two ways that chlorpyrifos and diazinon can be applied. One is by a foliar application. The other is by a granule application. It's really, really important that the regional board and DPR understand, and members of the public understand, that there are no substitute pest control products for chlorpyrifosfordiazinon granules for control of soil insects. And the growers would switch if they had something else to use. So as a mitigation, if those products are lost, then that could have a major impact on the ability of growers in this area to grow lettuce and cool season vegetables. So hopefully that kind of takes me to the last, next point, is we really don't understand the modes of movement. And there still needs to be a lot of discovery. I mean, these are older products, and you would think we would know more than we know, but it's almost as we collect data, it creates more questions than it answers, and there's still a lot of information that needs to be gathered about how these products move. The last point is, I know there's emphasis on vegetation barriers. And in other parts of the country, there's been a lot of work done with vegetation barriers. And what we see is that the type of plants that are used in vegetation barriers are really critical as a mitigation tool. It's not adequate just to go out and throw plants out there and expect mitigation to occur. You have to be specific about what plants are used to mitigate what pesticides. Thank you.
So that's interesting to know that the plant selection is very critical.
Yes.
To having a effective vegetated buffer. And what if you've got a farm that, you know, through a year is using different crops, each having their own pesticide requirements? Are your buffers going to then have combinations of plants?
Quite probably, mm-hmm. Yes. It impacts half-life as well as the percent control, mm-hmm. Both. Mm-hmm.
My concern as I hear all of this information about toxicity is to make sure that we have some tools that in time are going to be effective in getting rid of toxicity in our surface waters. So I, from what I've read so far, from what staff has put into some of their answers to questions, is that yes, it looks like through better irrigation practices, better pesticide application practices, and with the creation of vegetated buffers, that it looks like there's a very real chance that we can eliminate toxicity.
I agree
with that?
My points are more that don't jump the gun. There's a lot of information that still needs to the growers, we need to do what we can in the short term to mitigate. But don't jump the gun and say the only possibility is eliminating the pesticides or in imposing management practices that may not be as effective. And quite honestly, there hasn't been that much work done on the Central Coast about what plants in vegetated buffers actually are the most effective. A lot of that data is coming from the Midwest, where they have different plant spectrums.
Any grant proposals?
Any grant proposals?
For looking at vegetated buffer constituents?
Not that I know of.
And maybe Dr. Hunt knows more about that, because that's what he's been working on, right, in terms of do we know exactly how to formulate vegetated buffers?
I agree with Kay that the preponderance of data is coming from the Midwest, from the lower Mississippi Valley. There's been some work up at University of California, Santa Cruz, looking at different types of buffers for retaining nutrients. The work that we're doing at about four sites in the lower Salinas Valley, the plants that are chosen based on the habitat in which they grow. These are vegetated treatment ditches, so if there's water full time, we'll use floating pennywort. If there's water part of the time, different grasses. So it's not geared specifically towards the pesticides as much as the habitat that the plants need to grow in.
And that's my question. Are we trying to get that information?
Yeah, I'm not aware of any grants to look at pesticide-specific buffers. That's a good idea.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Diaz, we're ready.
Okay. Are we on? There you go.
There you go.
Okay, this is the picture of the Napomo watershed, the lower part of Napoma watershed nearest the speedway. We're looking at this tubing, nitrate-type passing tubing that we're that's in there. The beavers are making a nest out of it now. They're actually damming with it. Okay, go to the next one, please. And this is our Napoma creek, where it's massive everywhere in the creek streams. I've talked to Katie about this before. I've been passed down to three people since Katie to deal with, and I haven't got any response from any of them. Next, please. And this is also, you've seen the water there, and you've seen it right in the water. It's massive, believe me. This is the Santa Maria River mouth, at the mouth of the river at the beach. It's in there now. It's also in the ocean now. The halibut fishermen are picking it up. Last year they were picking it up while they were trolling in, at 28 inches of depth of water. You know, their gear is at 28 inches, and they're picking it up.
Mr. Diaz?
Inches of water.
Mr. Diaz?
Yes.
I think maybe we missed the very first part. Is this drip irrigation?
Drip irrigation tubing, which they send the nitrates through to feed the plants, which is in our creeks, which is washing out like a wash machine, which is throwing out the nitrates, the residuals. And this is a continuing thing. I've been after this for 13 years and haven't got no response from nobody to really deal with this. We're thinking about going to the governor with this issue because we're not getting help from county or anybody here. That I think that's really effective. The farmers won't let us in there to clean it out. Last year we had our creek cleanup day. I work with the people in the Napoma downtown to keep our creeks clean, and we have no tubing in our creeks in town. It's all in the stream beds from the farmlands all the way to the ocean. And the river beds are massive. This is also near the oil lines in the Napoma. I took Mr. Chandler, Rich Chandler, through there to show him the oil sands. There's 1,200-pound hunks of oil sand in the creek there, many of them from previous spills years and years ago. This is also in the creek stream bed. Go ahead and go to the next one, please. I'm trying to get through. This is the river. This is Santa Maria River at the mouth of the Napoma Creek, where it enters the river. It's in the river there. I've been trying to get this to...
It's upside down.
Yeah, upside down. You know, I'm really trying hard to get this dealt with because the wildlife at the ocean will suffer. I'm a fisherman. I love the ocean. The seals get caught in it. They're dead. Everything that gets caught in this stuff will die. Boats, props getting caught with it, what have you. And then this is also in the Napoma Creek. They are picking it up. For the last couple of years, they have been picking it up, which I'm very thankful for. But they're not cleaning up our stream beds. Our stream beds are still letting it transfer down. But it's a massive problem. We need help here. I've been begging for help. I need help from all of you guys to help us stop this problem. And also from the farmers to allow us permission to get in there to clean it. Hmm. We will clean it.
Thank you for your comments.
Okay, thank you.
Staff, Mr. Shalhoff. Yeah. Mr. Diaz.
Mr. Diaz, could you come back a second? So how's this stuff getting into the creek?
Okay, this is from previous farming over the years. Uh-huh. Years ago, they used to just use it and then bury it, either rototill it back into the ground or burn it. And I've been watching the burn things going on. I've reported several times, and they have been caught for burning it. This is something that's ongoing. When it's foggy, they still burn. You know, they still burn it there. The other thing is, like I said, the rototilling into the ground on all the farmlands. Not all the farmlands, I would say the upper farmlands of the Delisegas and the Hermerick Creek area have been. It's massive. It's like porcupines sticking out of the ground.
How many farms do you think are doing causing this?
I would say there's three main streams that do it, and that's the Hermerick Creek, the Delisegas Creek, and also the Upper Haystack Creek. That's where the biggest piles came from, is Upper Haystack in the 2001 flood, which caused our whole town to be flooded because it plugged our bridgeways.
And what crops do they grow?
They grow everything from lettuce to just everything under the sun. It's used for all crops.
Okay. All right.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Briggs?
Yes. Present.
Present. Seems like staff ought to look into this.
Yeah, I haven't seen
this
issue.
Trash.
Right.
Yeah.
Karen, do you have something you wanted to add? Oh, Corinne has something to add to this? Okay.
Hi, sure. I'm the recent staff person that's working on this issue, and we have been in contact with Mr. Diaz, but for some reason he ceased communicating with us. But what we have been doing, I've begun inspections in the watershed, and I've talked with the county stormwater people, and they are working on this issue also. And I've also spoken with Kay Mercer, the watershed coordinator, about having this put in her newsletter and also to see how we can proceed with this issue. So it isn't something that we're ignoring, but we haven't had touch with Mr. Diaz for several weeks now. I actually went out on inspection with Mr. Diaz and Ralph about 2 months ago, or out on a site visit. So.
Okay.
Okay.
Why don't you guys make up and start over again and see what we can do?
Can you put something in the Yields report? Maybe. At some point this year, so we know that this is being handled.
Yeah, and this is a new one on me, frankly. But I know we've had some similar complaints and obvious concerns with plastic from strawberry growing. You know, that becomes a disposal recycling problem. Hopefully, it's a recycling problem, not disposal. But yeah, we can report back in terms of what we find out about this. I don't know if this is something that, and Mr. Diaz is mentioning a fairly small area here in our region, but obviously we have drip irrigation through thousands and thousands of acres throughout our region, and I don't know if this is something that's a common problem in other creeks. Maybe some of our staff knows. We'll check on that.
Maybe you can check on that and let us know, and we need to make sure that some agency is taking responsibility for stopping it.
Right, and then Mr. Diaz mentioned in the Pomo Creek the oil pipeline crossing, and we do have a cleanup under a oversight of cleanup underway as far as that site goes through our spills program.
Okay, next speaker is Richard Sadowski, Marla Jo Bruton, Ralph Bishop, and then Lawson Schaller.
Richard Sadowski, citizen of North Morro Bay. I'm also a mechanical engineer by profession, and I'm a member of the Directory of Experts to the Scientific Advisory Team for the Ocean Protection Council. And I'd like to read a little excerpt from our Morro Bay Nitrate Studies, Issues and Concerns. In early of March 2008, a rash of newspaper articles and television news spots told concerns that Morro Bay's wells were contaminated by nitrates from fertilizers used by local farmers. Cited as evidence was the Morro Bay nitrate study done by the city and by the Cleath and Associates and published in December of 2007. Marla Jo and I and other colleagues had taken that report and reviewed it and then submitted that report to you, Mr. Briggs, and your staff. And basically, we surmised a couple little problems with that report. We disagreed with a lot of the issues in that report and stated a couple of key factors. And some of the key factors was the failure to consider the possible impacts of bioxide use at the Cayucas lift stations. And for those of you on the board who don't know, the Cayucas Sanitary District is a special district, and basically they have five lift stations and then pump all their raw sewage down Main Street, down Highway 41, and into the jointly owned Morro Bay Wastewater Treatment Plant. Our findings in the earlier report showed a significant amount of exfiltration in the main sewer lines at that point. Bioxide was used in Cayucas to address the highly problematic hydrogen sulfide gas problem that's along Main Street where all the sewage is being pumped down or pumped, gravity fed, after the force mains. Other issues that were concerned in bioxide, if it's not used properly, turns into a synthetic fertilizer in the sewage. So when it's exfiltrated, it's a synthetic fertilizer. There's also insufficient study of sewer exfiltration as cause for well contamination. The wells are located right in near an aquifer there at Highway 41, and that's where all the sewage is pumped down to the Morro Bay Wastewater Treatment Plant. And also there was errors and omissions in the nitrate isotope studies, which we conferred with a chemist, one of the colleagues, Mr. Brian Steggy. And also there were other issues. So I would highly recommend that the nitrate study be taken very seriously that we submitted, and looking forward to your response. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Just a reminder that we're talking about item 22 of toxicity in our surface waters, so ask people to stick to the topic. That would be great.
Marla Jo Bruton?
Yes, thank you. I am speaking on item 22, and in particularly the Estero Bay Hydrological Unit. The report that Mr. Sadowski just referred to and study has to do with the Estero Bay Hydrological Unit. And this whole thing started out as far as the farmers go in March of 2008, a rash of newspaper articles and television news spots told of concerns that Morro Bay's wells were being contaminated by nitrates from fertilizers used by local farmers. Cited as evidence was the Morro Bay nitrate study done by the city by Cleese and Associates, published in 2007. We have submitted our analysis of the Cleese study to Mr. Briggs. Well, we gave it to the front office, and they said they'd deliver it to him April 9th. This is we spoke earlier about a collections and conveyance system reports that we had submitted to this staff here, and we were waiting for a response from the city of Morro Bay and Cayucas as to that those reports. So this is the last of a series of reports that we're doing in our area. And I'm going to submit this to the board since the staff hasn't given it to you yet. As far as the Estero Bay Hydrologic Unit, your monitoring in San Luis Obispo County coastal watersheds is conducted by the 30 sites. Monitoring for toxicity was conducted in 2002 at 7 sites. Cooperative monitoring program toxicity monitoring is going on since January 2006 at 5 monitoring sites in agriculturally influenced area. No toxicity has been reported at sites in this hydrologic unit. Well, the city of Morro Bay, our well water, our drinking water is completely non-drinkable. We have high nitrate levels. We still have MTBE from the we thought was cleaned up. We still have MTBE in there. We have high salinity rates. Okay, we have a desal plant that was authorized on an MPDES plant in 1999 under emergency conditions, and that desal was only to be used under a level 5 water severity need in our city. That desal is being currently used all the time. I'm up here to ask that this board realize that the Morro Valley Basin and the Chorro Valley Basin are severely impaired, and the toxicity, I mean, you can talk about pesticides, but the sources you're talking about nitrates over there, and we have a far worse condition in Morro Bay, and we'd really like to get some attention to this, please.
Thank you for your comments.
Okay.
She mentioned submitting a report to staff. Yeah, she's giving the board a copy now. Do you know about the report?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, we've received it.
And and I have one other thing here to submit to the board, please, for the record.
Okay. All right. Mr. Bishop and then Lawson Schaller.
My name is Ralph Bishop, and I certainly appreciate you taking the time to listen to me. I was going to talk about the oil spill that's 2 feet under the active channel of the Napomo Creek, but I thought instead maybe I should follow up on what Mr. Diaz said. We have worked diligently to try to get our point across to the problem of plastics, herbicides, and things like that in Napomo Creek. Now, we are not replete with all kinds of data. We have watched the creek die for 49 years. Now we've almost lost all our insects. The birds of prey are gone. No amphibians, no reptiles. So all the data in the world doesn't mean much to us from what we see. We followed the black tubing, which is a signature. It's a signature of the pollution all the way from its obvious source, 8x10 glossies, folks, and down the Napomo Creek into the Santa Maria River, where there are car-sized masses of it, right down to West Main Beach. These are facts, undeniable, and we've documented it by over 300 hours of film and thousands of 8x10 glossies. Now, we've had a difficult time getting our point across, and that is why we feel we've had to come here today. I have submitted detailed maps to staff, pictures. I don't know what more we could have done. And my concern here, especially after listening to what's happened in Los Osos, especially after listening to this, the commentary, is that there comes a time when you have to take the bull by the horns and face the situation and be proactive about a situation. And this is the time. That's my main concern, is that we, as two normal run-of-the-mill citizens, we never thought of ourselves as activists or eco-zealots or anything. It's the last thing we think of ourselves. We think of ourselves as people who see a problem, address the problem, and take care of the problem. And I know, as I said to Monica, you guys have got a tough situation here. On the other hand, you signed on for it. So I would like to, with all due respect to staff, give them some more 8x10 glossies and avail ourselves. Daniel Diaz and I, we were called creek dogs. We said, okay, we'll dog you then. You know, they thought we were just a problem, too controversial, blah, blah, blah. Well, we'll quit when we're dead.
Mr. Bishop, when did you first approach our staff with this problem?
You know, I've lost track of time. Six, seven, 8 year. I don't know, a long time. I've lost track.
But
I feel that if they will take a look at our given maps and pictures, and we will avail ourselves at any point in time. They have our numbers, and we're willing as citizens. We've been touted as anti-agriculture, and this is the farthest thing from the fact. We've grown up with agriculture. There's just a few bad apples in a barrel of otherwise honorable agricultural heritage.
Right. And well, this is going to come back to the board. This is the first time I've heard of this.
Mm-hmm.
And when it does come back, it should come back when we're in San Luis Obispo, not in Santa Barbara or Watsonville, so that these gentlemen can, you know, be able to comment on whatever's in the EO report. Do we have a sea camp monitoring station near this creek or any type of... We do.
Yeah. What does that data show in terms of...
We have two monitoring sites on the Paloma Creek vessel.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Bishop.
Yes, thank you.
Members of the board, I'm Mary Adams. I have the Sea Camp program. And we have two monitoring sites on the Paloma Creek proper, as well as several monitoring sites along Santa Maria River. We've seen the same type of contamination, trash, et cetera. We've documented on numerous occasions. We have photos of it as well. None as telling as the photos we've seen today, but we've seen it for years in these locations and have been documenting it.
Toxicity?
Oh,
what to the water
well.
Sampling? It does confirm that. Okay.
But we're talking about two different issues, right?
Two different issues.
Right. Yeah. And I'm just curious because he's mentioning all the ag use, and I'm wondering if there's any correlated, you know, toxicity that might be coming from these same farms or up in the watershed.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Schaller, and then all on Perlman.
Good afternoon again, board and staff, fellow citizens. Lawson Schaller, Los Osos. I want to thank the staff for the report. It was very interesting. I want to primarily talk about the urban water runoff, but I just have to have a real quick comment in regard to the agriculture. I didn't hear much emphasis on organic farming. It seems like perhaps could play a very big role in that. Regarding urban runoff, I think the excuse me, Chris. It's distracting. Lost my train of thought. Regarding the urban storm runoff, I think the public outreach is an excellent way to go. Mr. Thompson emphasized that. I recently attended a healthy garden workshop in Los Osos put on by the City of Morro Bay, Morro Bay National Estuary Program, and also San Luis Obispo County. And I think there's a big bang for the buck there. You're taking that runoff from hardscapes and roofs, for example, in a rain garden, which is one of the things I found most exciting, and keeping it out of the gutter. You're getting a double bonus. You're eliminating the runoff that accumulates the pollutants, but you're also taking that water into the rain garden. It's percolating down into the water basin, which we've got some water shortage issues there as well. So I really want to encourage the board and the staff to do whatever they can in outreach. I think it's a great way to go. I hope Allison doesn't mind me mentioning. I saw her at a Brock Dolman. I think you were at the Brock Dolman watershed. That was really exciting to see. She got up and made a brief presentation. I know myself and a lot of other people were really impacted by that. She got their attention. Water board's involved. I don't know if Mr. Thompson was at the water festival. Someone took some pictures, and I'm sorry I had prior equipment, so I couldn't get there, but it looks like there was a presence there, and I think that's great stuff. Quick question, urbanized area. I don't know if that's defined. I was curious about that. And I'm also interested in getting more information and perhaps becoming more involved in the urban storm water runoff. Again, I see huge potential there. The double bonus of eliminating the accumulated pollutant runoff and recharging the water basin by going with organic gardening methods, using native plants, you can use less water, less chemicals. It was a great workshop there at
well, the County of San Luis Obispo and the City of San Luis Obispo are going to have swamps. I mean, stormwater management plans, and there are lots of opportunities for people to get involved through their public outreach to do all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
So I would kind of direct you to those two entities. Eventually, Los Osos is going to have some type of stormwater management plan component that takes care of it, probably part of the county's plan, mm-hmm. I would assume.
Yeah. So, okay. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Perlman.
Thank you for hearing. My name is Alon Perlman. I live in the Prohibition Zone in Los Osos. And at the time that the nitrates started showing up in the well tests in Morro Bay, I did attend several of the Morro Bay City town meetings in that concern. I do have a background in various separation technologies, and one of the things I was hoping to learn from them was, in fact, what was the source of their nitrates. And this relates to the discussion previously, item 22, in that sometimes the absence of a thing is the most important thing. However, when it comes to monitoring and testing, you only find what you look for. And the problem with the nitrate study done by Morro Bay is they didn't act to eliminate all possibilities of their sources. For example, if you are looking at septic tanks discharging, you will find nitrates, you will find ammonia, you will find coffee. If you are looking at discharges from the men's colony, you're quite likely to find methamphetamines. And the men's colony has, in addition to the actual overspillages that have taken place from there, they have a secondary use for their wastewater, which travels to the Morro Bay golf course. That golf course, in fact, did come before the Board of Supervisors last year because the pipes that were delivering the water to irrigate the golf course were found to be leaking. So we're talking about essentially the upper effluent of the CMC golf course, and those waters were not just used on the green grasses due to the leakages, and this is on record in a Board of Supervisors meeting in this county where the city manager, I believe, or at least the wastewater manager for the city of Morro Bay stated that the nitrated waters from that pipe end up in the Morro Bay estuary. That is on record. And so I am asking you to continue to incorporate science in the degree that you have, but to recognize that you are responsible for characterizing all the entries and on the proper sources and identifying correctly the sources of pollution that enter into the MPA. And one of the problems with this study by Morro Bay is that they simply did not look for they didn't look, as they should have, for toxicity in their groundwater, because that toxicity from large amounts of those toxicities that have been discussed in this report are what would help indicate the primary source of those nitrates. For example, in Los Osos currently, there's a well with high nitrates. It's been discovered that there are it's not a high level of nitrates, it's 7 real grams. It's more than is potable, but it can be mixed. However, there's no ammonia. That means that the source of those nitrates are historical, biological, and is like the contribution of septic systems to that is probably there, but is minimal. It's not a major component. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. I have no more speaker cards for this item.
I don't know how to... Can I submit
pass it down here. Does any other member of the public wish to address the board on this agenda item? Okay.
My name's Rachel Rosenthal. I'm from Los Osos and San Luis. But I just want to say it's an honor to be here because this is one of my favorite television shows.
And now you get to star in it,
and
right?
No, I feel like I know each and every one of you. And as I listen to this, I'm reminded how much I've learned about water and our county because I watched your televised meeting for years and years before they weren't there anymore. And since this, listening to this gentleman's trauma with Napoma, I'm reminded of your own frustration with the dump truck in when you were going home and your past meetings about plastic and so many issues over the years that you've brought up at these meetings. And I want to beg you to televise your meetings again. When I listen to Matt saying how important education is. I simply think this meeting is the best education tool for all of us to learn about each other's issues, all these groups that come and speak from all over the region. I've learned about silviculture here and found little family forests up north that I go to now to buy my lumber because of here. I learned about the Olin spill and followed that. And recently at the San Luis City Council meeting, they brought up the issue of the $40 million budget item. And the mayor said a lot of the people in the city had called him and asked about that. And I knew what that was for, about the request to change the beneficial use. And for them, for the city sewer, to deal with their nitrate issues. And because of this board and the meetings on television, I knew as a citizen of Slow City about that. And one of the city council members said, "Who is this regional board?" And I just feel like we're so lucky to be in a small county that knows about, I mean, our council meetings, the county super meetings, where the whole county listens to each other's issues about dirt, the NRDC maps, and water quality and land use planning and low impact. I learned about the low impact development contract from your board listening to the Ocean Protection Council on TV at 1 a.m. And that was the only way. So that is what I want to ask you, beg you, to rebudget the meeting.
It took me a while to recognize you. Didn't we talk one day by the supermarket in town here? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I wish we had the funds to make, you know, broadcasting of this throughout the region, not just here. I mean, Santa Barbara County doesn't get to see any of this ever. Either did the northern parts of the region. So it's a problem with funds.
If we had it, we would. And AGP comparatively is so affordable.
Yeah.
Excuse me. For bang for the buck.
Can I add a comment?
Dr. Hunter?
I've had a chance to talk with people at the state board about it to let them know my same views. We agree that the televised meetings are one of the best sources of informing people not only about how the regional board functions and what their role is, but also in terms of seeing solutions and seeing people kind of come together to figure out how to do really hard things, and with you know, a sense of the spirit of the technology that we have to apply to these problems, but also in seeing how effective staff can be in supporting you know, folks who really truly want to find the right solution. So the short answer is they don't know yet how they can identify monies, but there is an effort statewide to develop the online capacity to stream video and other less, I think, costly in terms of just on a regular basis provide this information via media. So I don't know where we stand in the lineup, and maybe Roger knows, but we're not there yet. But that's one path that I see, and it's down the line. But I do think that these hearings are available in audio format on the web, which is not as, you know, it's not as entertaining, but you can track certain issues if you watch the agenda. So that would be another way. But thank you for making that comment. It's near and dear to my heart.
Okay. Looks like we have no more speakers for this item. I just wanted to say, and I forgot to, Mr. Schmidt, I read all of your material. And I appreciated what you had submitted, and especially the newsletter portion, I think, that went out. So I think that, you know, the ag community is getting the information that I would hope they would get on what's going on with toxicity levels. And I'm pretty encouraged by at least the involvement of both people like Kay and yourself. in keeping this program moving along, really, at the level that it is. So,
thank you very much. We are having outreach in six different watersheds of concern this summer, and we're linking that with the upstream monitoring and the continuous flow monitoring. So the farmers in those areas will have more information than any other area in the state has ever had for a particular small watershed. Kay Mercer is working with that in the San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara area. And Tracy Roberts, who's here from Monterey County Farm Bureau, is also helping with the Quail Creek and Chular Creeks in Monterey County. And the Ag Coalition, in the six-county Ag Coalition, is going to be helping in San Benito County and in Santa Clara County. So we will have some of the more difficult areas particularly focused on, so the farmers know what will be happening, and also bring in researchers to tell them how they can clean up the water. Hopefully we will be able to show significant change before this time next year.
Good. Well, I guess then, staff, we're going to see this topic come back as part of the renewal of the ag waiver sometime next year, next summer. Okay. Thank you very much.
Also, just I wanted to respond to one of the points that Mr. Schmidt brought up, and that is that maybe the wording was maybe we weren't as sensitive as we should have been to the wording as far as the different crops, and certainly the intent is not to target certain crops, lettuce or otherwise. I had a nice salad last night, and I hope to continue to be able to do that. But I think the point is we need to look in terms of what are the biggest sources as far as if we have a certain pesticide toxicity, then where can we get the most bang for the buck in terms of trying to make improvements? But it doesn't mean by any means that the goal would be to limit crop production. But how can we make sure that we can have a productive, sustainable region that is fully sustainable in terms of the runoff as well as the crop yield?
Dr. Hunter, parting comments.
I want to thank, I want to reiterate something that Chuck Pritchard said, and I think is appropriate for the program, and the success of the ag water, irrigated ag water program, is that these problems require individual assessments and solutions, operation by operation. I think the strength of this program has been that's built into the design. And you see that gives the opportunity to the operator to determine best way to go, best technology, costs, and so forth. And that, I think, is the strength of the program from my perspective.
Okay. Thank you. We will now move on.